Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's going on, Red?
What's good, Brother B?
Not much. What up, everybody? Another episode of The Menu on Blog Talk Radio. Big Red, Brother B in the house. What's good? Hope all is well with everybody. What's up, Red? What's going on?
What's good, Brother B? I'm good. I'm fine.
How was your Labor Day weekend?
Quiet, like it's supposed to be.
Oh, true. Yeah. Had a little bit of work. True. Yeah, I had a little bit of work. You know, just a little hanging out, you know, Sunday evening. Which, you know, had a beautiful dialogue, conversation, you know, whatever you call it, whatever you choose to call it, with some beautiful people. And which actually spawned the topic for tonight. And it wasn't, like, out of any malice or any hatred or anything, but it's just, like, a kind of a self-reflective thing, you know. Sometimes we have to, you know, take into account and accountability of the things that we may do or not do, you know, to push ourselves, you know, as a people. And, you know, it's just interesting, you know, as a people that we are. You know, it's also interesting at the fact that there's a lot of things that we don't want to discuss or we don't want to face or don't want to talk about. But, you know, before we get into that, once again, Big Red, Brother B with the Menu on Blog Talk Radio. Guest calling number 347-324-3395. So before we get the topic under the way, Red, you know, I just got, you know, something that I put together that I just wanted to run, you know, to go out there and see what's good. Now, for the record, this is not about pointing fingers or placing blame. Tonight's show is about making an attempt to identify some of the things that has made us as black people in this country the way we are towards one another. Now, if you look at a tree, you know, that's one thing. But to really appreciate the tree, you cannot not think about the roots and all that it does. But if I can take it a little further, what about the seed? The tree had to start somewhere, correct or incorrect. Now, if I may do a comparison, in my opinion, it is the ignorance, sloth, greed of those that chose to enslave that, to me, are the seed, that grew a tree only to bear this bitter fruit that even to this day remains a delicacy for most. Think about it. Slavery, raping of men, women, and children, mental conditioning, buck breaking, the murder of men, women, and children, the destruction of families, Willie Lynch, public hangings, being burned alive, Emmett Till, Jim Crow, the denial of basic human rights, but of course, black folk were never considered fully human anyway, especially in this country, in those days and at times today. The assassination of our leaders, Inequality, Central Park Five, Sandra Bland, Tamir Rice, Anton Sterling, George Floyd, just to name a few. And who do we owe this to? Those that planted the seed. Slavery in this country was legal for 141 years, Red.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was reading something where it says, according to a 2009 study published in the European Journal of Social Psychology, it takes 18 to 254 days for a person to form a new habit. The study also concluded that on average, it takes 66 days for a new behavior to become automatic. So with that being said, just think about it. 141 years of mental, physical conditioning and oppression.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, exactly. So with that being said, ask us not why we are until you can speak truthfully on how we came to be in this country. Once again, Big Red Brother B in the house with the menu. Guest calling numbers 347-324-3395. Topic for tonight, the house divided. Does our blackness betray us? I can't pull any punches on this one or bite my tongue. I believe that because of what we have gone through, and some people will try and, you know, discredit or disavow it like it never happened, but this is not our history. This is your country's history. It's in the books. You can try to change it, but the stain will always remain. And don't think just because we don't always mention it as we should that there isn't evidence of it. When we look and we interact with ourselves, there's like sometimes it seems like there's a deep-seated hatred or division when we talk to one another that I do not see in any other ethnic groups. Now, I could be wrong, but in my observation, it's not what I've seen or what I've experienced.
Well, I can say this, that I have heard that in other ethnicities that actually they do discriminate against one another. And, you know, I can believe it, that they do that within their own cultures. It's like, just like you said, it's not as common as it is with our people. But it does happen. It's just not, you know, like I said, with us, it's even more. And I think, I'll say this, I think society glorifies it more with us. You understand? It's like it's always, I'll say, brought out more when it comes to us. It's like, oh, look at them. Look, they're always divided. They're always just, they're never, you know, they never are on board with each other. But you know, meanwhile, they have their own, you know, in their own culture, they have it, or the ethnicity, that, you know, they have it like a divided, either be like it's not skin color, it's either, so like, if you think about it, look at, you know, like Spanish people, like in terms of like Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, Ecuadorians, whatever, you know, falls underneath that. They are also divided within their own culture because they do it within, because of skin color. So they feel that they do it between skin color, because if you look at, you know, you have some, you know, Spanish people that are very light with, you know, long hair, certain type of hair texture and everything, but then you have the darker ones, and just like they don't want to be associated with the darker ones. And these are people that are some of them are in their own family. Like, some of them you see, like, the grandmother, the aunt, this one and that one, and, you know, they're skin color is you know, brown or darker skin or whatever, but they may still have that certain type of texture of hair. But guess what? The lighter ones will be like, oh, well, you know they kind of make a divide of it, or they'll try to make it, like, go outside of that and say, oh, well, I look like this. But it's like, but that's your grandmother standing right there. Like, you understand what I'm saying? It's like they go somewhere, just like, yeah, well, I look like this, or you playing this certain way, but then your grandmother is darker than the person that you're talking to. You know what I'm saying? So the other cultures do that, and other ethnicities do it. So with us, it's, like I said, it's just glorified more with us. I don't know why, but then again, I do, because it's trying to keep that divide. Because, like I said, it wants to be like, oh, no, black people can't never stick together. Oh, they're never going to be, you know, they can never stick together. They can never be together on something. You know, in a way, unfortunately, we feed into that.
Now, before caller 6947 comes on, I will say this. Those other ethnicities don't come with that stain of our history. Like, you know, there's many ethnic groups, you know, across the planet. Everyone has their own story. But it seems like we own slavery. There could have been other slaves, but we seem to own it. We seem to be the ones that perpetuate or have been put in line to perpetuate this certain stereotypical attitude, because, of course, oh, we had to go over there and get them because they were savages, and we had to take them and bring them here to the country to, you know, make them work and force them to do this and train them to do that and, you know, bring them to God and, you know, let them know the error of their ways. This is the BS narrative that has been spun. And I think a lot of us have went for the okey-doke. We have a lot of false beliefs and things that aren't even originally ours. Like, we're taking ownership to someone else's property, and we're suffering from it. But the worst part about it is we're against one another on it. You know what I'm saying? And like, for all the years, for everything that we've been through or that we've went through, it's like there's always an issue with black. No one else, there's no white-on-white crime. There's no Spanish-on-Spanish crime. It's only black-on-black crime. Like, we're the only ones that do these things. So I get it when you talk about other ethnic groups, and it's not to, you know, discredit them for what has happened to them or what they bring to the table. But in this discussion, this is one thing where I have to say this is about us. And us, in order for us to go forward, we have to correct us. Because one thing that no matter what you say, they will band together quicker than us. Whether it's Ecuadorian, whether it's a Puerto Rican, whether it's Dominican, that whole Latin community will band together compared to what we don't do when it comes down to one another. Call us 6947. Well, you're on the air with the menu. What's up?
Hey guys, how you doing tonight?
Hello.
Yo, Miss Cherry.
How you doing?
How you doing, Miss Cherry?
Oh, yes. I'm just trying to catch on to speed because I just tuned in, but I just want to point out a couple of things that I agree with. That Big Red was saying how there is division amongst other ethnicities, right? If you look at your Hispanics, whether they're El Salvadorian or Puerto Rican or what, there's division there, or just regular Spaniards from Spain. But we also have to realize that even though we're black people or people of color, we also don't have the same story. You have West Indian people that didn't go through the American form of slavery. So we're just assuming that if I look at you and you look like me, we have the same history, we have the same story, therefore we should be able to relate. But some of them, you know, they're new generation. They're immigrants, first generation immigrants now. They don't respond the same to being called the N-word because it doesn't mean anything to them. And so if my story is not the same as your story, even though we look the same, I may not be able to relate to you. I might feel like, well, why are you crying? I came over. Things are not like that for me, so they shouldn't be like that for you. I don't think we'll be able to get it together until the people who are newly immigrants can understand and appreciate what the ones that came over as slaves had to go through for it to be possible for them to come over. Other than that, you could see the subdivision amongst us. We have Haitian Americans, we have Jamaican Americans, Trinidadians. None of them get along. And African Americans, obviously, when you're looking at the whole list of people of color, you have people from other ethnicities, islands, and things like that looking down on American-born blacks because they've been conditioned or brought up to believe that we are lazy. I always say we're not lazy, we're tired. We've been fighting this for 400 years, and then people are coming over 100 years ago and saying, well, what's the problem? And I think until we can understand each other on that level, we'll never be able to come together.
Javi, 5891. You on the air, what's up?
Peace and greetings to all. What's up, everybody?
What's up, brother?
Hey, what's going on, people? I was listening to some things on the show and stuff, and what's the name of the young lady that's talking right now? Other than Big Red, Miss Cherry, how you doing? You know what it is? It's like colonization. Caused a great divide amongst our people. We all know that. Mm-hmm. That's why you have some of us who speak English, French, Spanish, Portuguese, all different languages, because remember, we were all scattered all over the place, and we were each coming with, we each have different cultures. For me, growing up in a Haitian house, growing up, my parents came from Haiti, and I grew up Haitian culture. But at the same token, I was also taught to respect all cultures. That's how come I can't say that, being born and raised in Brooklyn, but with Haitian parents, I would never sit there and look down upon black Americans and say they're lazy, because that's not necessarily so. But, however, I will say, growing up, I've seen some ugly acts of discrimination, and it's coming from us, and it's sad because we should learn from each other, from different cultures, you understand? As black people, there's an entire diaspora of us all over the place. But mm-hmm. what I grew up with and what I witnessed in school, as soon as you said you're Haitian, you were the target of a beat down after school. They would say, oh, you're a refugee. Hell, Haitian people stink. Haitian people do voodoo. Haitian people brought AIDS. Haitian people this. It was like it was a curse to be Haitian. The jokes, the Haitian body odor jokes, all that stuff. And I'm like, man, this is the ignorance that some of us have. I'm like, why not try to learn something instead of putting the other person down? Because it wasn't until junior year of high school, that's when things start to change, that people start to accept Haitians in a different way. But still, it's like, oh, this and this and this. I'm like, yeah, but little did you know is that Haiti is the first black republic in the world that gained freedom. And one time I said that to somebody, and you know what's sad about it? It was an American that said that too. Like, what was so special about that? Didn't y'all do voodoo? I'm like, no, we defeated the slave masters. And it's like the way they show Haiti on TV, it was conditioned to show that Haiti was such a poor and miserable place, when I could show you pictures of Haiti where you'll be shocked and amazed how beautiful it is, the way the media makes it, from the mainstream media. And the thing is, it's like I said, colonization has separated us as a people. You know, and I use that as an example.
Well, one
seen
thing
it
I
time and time again.
And you're absolutely right. But one thing I will say, what to me has always seemed like Haiti has gotten a bad rap, is because you fought that fight.
Yeah, the first.
It's
yeah,
because
we did the
it's
first
because you fought that fight.
Slave
so
revolt.
Your punishment. It's always going to be
yeah.
your punishment. You're always
oh,
going to
yeah.
be
hold
shown and cast in
hold
a bad
on for
light.
A second, guys. Hold
yeah,
on.
it's always you're always going to be, you know, shown in a bad light. You're always going to be shown, you know, in some type of disrespectful way because you went against
exactly.
the grain. You went
yeah,
against
you,
the
you
system.
Defeated the slave master.
Yeah, exactly. And they seem to have a serious problem with that. So, I mean, with that being said, title of, you know, what we're going on tonight, you know, how's divided, you know, does our blackness betray us? It seems like being in this country,
mm-hmm.
and I can only speak for being in this country because this is the only country that I've, this is the country I was born in and lived in.
Right. Same here.
You have to, it's like your blackness always comes first. It's not
oh,
you
yeah.
as the individual. It's your blackness that comes first. And the thing is, as much as we are proud of it, there's some of us that are not. There's some of us that are not proud of our history. There's some of us that are not proud of each other because how the media, you know, cast certain light
exactly.
and how we're treated in this climate. Some people wear it as a badge.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is, once again, it's like our color doesn't define us. Like people, you know, I've heard other ethnic groups, you know, come across with the thing of like they try to make black like a stereotypical attitude. And it's interesting because it's like, oh, well, if you're black, you know, you act like this. If you're black, you act like that. If you're black,
exactly.
you know, you move like this. And it's like, wait a minute. That's not what being black is all about. I mean, first of all, I mean, I even have to try and take myself out of it because the whole using the word black to a degree is a negative anyway. If you look up the definition, it, you know, part of it means like devoid of light. It absorbs light, but it's also
right.
saying that it doesn't have any. So it's a negative from
that,
the
well,
start.
That's the conditioning. Yeah, but that's the conditioning
yeah.
that if
yeah.
you think about it, like I said, with black, it's like just like everything with, that has something to do with black is always something evil. It's always
dark.
Something
it's evil.
Like you said something dark, it's evil, it's this, it's that, like black, oh, black cats, bad luck or something.
Black
so
cats bring
a,
bad
a,
luck.
Right. It's
the
a,
future
it's
look
a conditioning.
Black.
Right. It's a conditioning that, as you said earlier, when you first started, that it's something that's been all these things have been conditioned, and it's basically like a brainwashing that we've been, you know, that has been happening to us, and unless you wake up to it and you start learning, because I was just having that conversation with my son and his friends last night, where it's like I told one of his friends, like, you're just learning certain things. Like, you're just learning certain things because somebody is teaching it to you because you didn't know about these things. And plus, you may have not had an experience with something yet, so you can't, you may not, it's not going to click with you. And I told him, I said, I'm 49 years old, and it's like I'm mad at within the last couple of years of the things that I had to unlearn. You understand mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Because I've been so conditioned and brainwashed. Is like, and I'm still learning. I'm still, you know, I'm still learning or still trying to basically unlearn a lot of things that I've been conditioned to do through all my life. So yeah, as you said, like black is just like you said, using that word black is always something negative. Now, I'm going to go back to something a little bit that you said before, Brother B. That that's the thing is. Why is it with us, it's like you have to act the surface. It's like an act. We're not an act. This is who we are as a people. Why does it have to be an act? Oh, well, I'm going to act like how they act. What do you mean act? It's not an acting. What do you
it's
mean
not,
by the...
Because,
and I'm going to say... I'm sorry. One more thing. And it's just like with some people, if you have black people, that say, well, I'm going to act Caucasian. I'm going to act like the white people. Like, what do you mean to act? That's just who they are. But why? What is this acting thing? Why can't you just be you? Why do you have to act like this or act like that?
All right, now that right there, well, hold on, because I got something for you. 0774, you're on the air with the menu. What's up?
I'm assuming that's me, right?
Hey, what's up, Selena?
Hi, how are you guys?
How are you?
So now,
I'm pretty good, right, I'm pretty good. I was just listening and receiving. So Ms. Sherry said one thing that kind of like really, really like, It hit my heart when she said that, you know, we kind of paved the way for a lot of these other cultures to come here. And one of the things that I noticed is that, you know, we as a black community, we divide ourselves, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I heard a brother do that, come over and say, I'm Haitian. You don't, when you go to these white folks, they don't say I'm white, I'm Russian Caucasian, or I'm German Caucasian.
Right.
Nobody said that.
Absolutely.
They just white. We come over, we got to separate ourselves and tell each other how we better or how
part.
We separate ourselves. You get the Jamaicans saying, no, I'm Jamaican or I'm Trinidadian or I'm
Asian.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Why can't we all be black?
It's a division between itself, so now it's a competition amongst each other when, in all reality, the Caucasians all see us as black.
Exactly.
That's all we are.
Yeah.
He's Haitian, you know, he's not really like the other black people. They don't
exactly.
say that.
Exactly, and that's sad. And this is the part that, and I'm glad you're saying that. You know what it is? I like what you're saying because this is the problem that we have. And unfortunately, it comes from us too as a people. You know, when someone has an accent other than a southern drawl.
Oh, yeah.
We tend to look down at that person like, because if I talk like this, like, where the hell is he from? You're here in America. What's wrong
right.
with you? I have an accent. I'm okay. I came from another country, but I'm still black.
Right.
We don't look at that brother or sister as black. We're like this. Oh, they from that place. I'm like, what?
But a lot
why
of times you don't
that?
Even have to. Like, for instance, most of my friends that were Haitian, I only knew because they told me. Oh, I'm from Haiti.
Right.
You know, most of them
that's
that were Trinidadian. I didn't know they were Trinidadian. I knew they probably was West Indian because of their accent. But I didn't need to know where they from. You American, you here for a reason. And if your country
exactly.
was that great, you'd still be there. So if you're here, so why not you speak
yeah, to sit there and get mad at somebody because they have an accent other than a southern drawl, what's the problem? You know, this leads me.
Automatically when
wait.
I speak, it's you from New York. Automatically.
Right.
I don't have to say anything. They hear a street in my voice. Oh, you're from New York. Now, there's sometimes when I go, when I remember, you know, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, right? And
mm-hmm.
I came to Long Island. Long Island was kind of like uppity. So I remember picking up, I wouldn't even say uppity. You know, maybe they specialize the English or focus on the English language a little bit more. You know, in Brooklyn, we got our Ebonics, our little slings and stuff like that. So when I came
you
to
breaking
Long
up a
Island,
little bit.
When I came to Long
bit.
You hear me?
Yeah,
we can hear you clear
okay.
now.
So when I came to Long Island, it was, oh, you from Brooklyn. And I remember not even saying I'm from Brooklyn and almost being judged, oh, you think you better than us. And I was like, ain't nothing special about Brooklyn. Like, why do you
yeah,
think
exactly.
being from Brooklyn
hey, hey,
is special?
Hey, Brownsville.
Hey, I'm from Brooklyn.
You know Brownsville.
I'm from
hey,
Brooklyn, too.
Watch
but,
it.
But
I'm from Brooklyn.
I didn't need that extra attention. I just didn't need that extra attention. It was almost like I had to prove myself because I was from Brooklyn. Meanwhile, you know, I thought I was moving all day. Like, the Jeffersons were coming to Long Island, and they automatically pushed me away because I was from Brooklyn. Now, granted, you know, I learned a few things. The education was a whole lot different out here. You know, so I picked up on a few things. And I remember going back to Brooklyn, and my friends that I grew up with, we're like, oh, you uppity now. Oh, yeah, you talking like some white folks. The same thing.
Oh, my goodness.
About,
yeah, exactly. See, yep.
Like, what's talking white? Like, proper?
But now, but wait a minute. You know, I can relate to what you're saying, because you know what happened? Let me tell you a story about what happened to me one time. And I had to check this brother big time. Homeboy saw, okay, y'all know about Dr. Tariq Nasheed and Dr. Umar Johnson when they came out with Hidden Colors. And the brother knows me. All of a sudden, the brother came up and started attacking me by saying that, you don't know what being black is. I'm like, huh? What you mean I don't know what being black is? Oh, you know, because you grew up on lockdown. You ain't never been arrested. I'm like, here we go again. I'm like, wow, that's that stupid stereotype again, aren't you? Where the hell did you get that
from? I don't know what a criminal is.
Well, you know what? Part of that leaves me. I'm sorry to interrupt, brother. But
no,
it's
go
going
ahead,
along
man.
Lines of what you're saying. There's this question that I have to get out. And since I kind of interrupted you, you're going to answer this question, and then we'll go down the line for anyone else who wants to jump in. Do you think that we have to redefine ourselves in this country due to our past in terms of slavery?
Repeat that question.
Do you think that we have to? Because see, I'm listening to everything that you guys are saying, but it all leads back to one thing. Because see, once again, it's that word slavery. No one wants to be associated with it. I've had conversations with Jamaicans, Trinidadians, Bajans. You Americans are slaves. We weren't this or we weren't that. No one wants to be under that word. So I ask, do you think that we have to try to redefine ourselves in this country, or when people even come to this country, due to the stains of slavery?
I don't feel that we should, but once again, we have to. I don't think we should do that. Because it's like, why should we? Like, we are here. Like, we here on this earth, period, whether we were in Africa or we're here in America, like, we're here. So I don't understand why we have to try to, redefine us. It's like, why do we have to do that?
We shouldn't have to, because you know what it is? It's like, you know what it is? Unfortunately, again, colonization has separated us all. And this is the thing that we give more to the separation when we allow ourselves to be separated, when we're not learning from other, people of other cultures, of where somebody comes from. And it is true about, saying, I came from this, I came from that. But how about this? Why not try to learn about the other person's country? Because you know what? I've even heard this when it comes down to people who come from the nations in Africa. Like they swear, I heard somebody call somebody from Kenya a spear chucker. And mind you, this person's black. How you going to
Damn, I heard that word in years.
Oh, that's spear chucker. I'm like, spear chucker.
I'm saying,
like,
I haven't heard that word in years. Yeah. Like, the last time I heard that word was on Archie Bunker.
Like, why would you call that person a spear chucker? Like, how are you going to call that person a spear chucker?
It's that internal hatred. It's that internal hatred.
Think about it.
So, as a matter of fact, think about it, but also check this out. I had a conversation with an African brother one day. And he was honest, kind of rude about it, but honest. And he told me, he said, you American black people are embarrassing to us in Africa. I said, wow. I said, wait, you're in America telling me that I'm embarrassing to you over in your country that you left to come over here for? I said, so how are we embarrassing? He said, because you don't fight. Like, you don't do this, and you just take what the white people do. And I said, hold on, brother. I said, all respectfully. Wipe your feet before you come in my house.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're here now. and you haven't gone through what we have gone through here. It's not to say that you don't have your own issues where you come from, but of course it's a majority of black people over there because it's Africa. That's just what it is. Over here in America, it's a melting pot. Things are differently. People have a jaded view of what black people are in this country due to the history, you know, and the things that we have had to face in this country. So don't tell me about how you're embarrassed because we don't fight. The laws weren't made for us to fight. The laws weren't geared for us to have a fair advantage or to mm-hmm. play with one another, you know, equally. It wasn't made that way. So until you can understand the politics of things and actually take a real hard look at the fact of, like, hey, don't think it wasn't an African that told the white men or the Spaniards when they came over to collect, hey, take them from that tribe. He didn't like that.
Can I answer the question about me declaring?
Mm-hmm. Of course. This way, get close to the phone. Ma'am.
Come on now.
Come
on now.
I don't think that it's our job to redefine anything from the past. What I do think it is our job is to, you know, gather some of those things. Let's understand why we went through what we went through and also understand that there was a time when black people loved each other just for being black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we mm-hmm. just loved each other. We didn't love each other because it was trending and because police brutality, because it is, like, we genuinely loved each other, right? And let's also understand that there was a time when we was respected. Those Martin Luther Kings and those slaveries and stuff like that, even those slave masters, you know, may not have showed respect, but trust and believe they knew if they turned their head, they might have had, you understand? Respect is knowing if I turn my head, something might happen. So, you know, let me not turn. So that's enough respect for me. I don't think we have the respect anymore because these people know we don't genuinely love each other.
Yep,
exactly. And I'm glad you're saying that because we...
How could we? When we take each other out before they do.
You know what? It all goes out the window.
Black Lives Matter.
And this is the thing that we do that's wrong with each other. Okay, yes, there's racism. Racism ain't going nowhere, okay? Racism, it's not going anywhere. But then after, when some of us try to tell our people the truth about what they're doing wrong, we get chastised for, we get called coons and all of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Here's what we have to do as a people, and that is take some responsibility. Taking
responsibility. That's a new word.
Yeah, responsibility.
Because you know what? How can we take responsibility when a lot of us don't even know what that is?
Exactly. We don't even know what it is. And this is the thing. And now when you say that, oh, you're a coon, you're this, I'm like, listen, when parents love their children and their children are doing something wrong, what do the parents do? They reprimand them for it, right? They punish. Mm-hmm. They punish the child because they love the child. They want to see the child do better. We as a people, a house divided cannot stand. We don't even, and Brother B, you said this before, and I agree 100%. We ain't got no damn community. We don't.
No.
Because you have, you know, even during the days of slavery, you had the house slave and you had the field slave. And it still exists to this very day. It was divide and conquer, and this is what it is with us as a people. We're more divided more than ever.
I think
you're
people
absolutely
at
right.
a time... We were at a time respected most when we was, and that's why I understand what that African brother meant. I know you told him the white man
mm-hmm.
in your house, but I understand currently what he meant because there was a time for our culture, we were willing to die for our culture, like slavery.
But we stopped doing that.
We were willing to die. Even Martin Luther King, the Malcolm X, they was willing to die for this culture.
Absolutely.
And
but
let me
even
tell you, the
then,
one time
even then, it was still divided.
Before you go,
even
for,
then,
the one time that I seen us unite, and I seen white people follow us, with this Joy Floyd thing. We were willing to die city to city.
The world.
And they respected us. They respected us. But you know what happened? He went back to Chicago, killed 12 of us that night. He went back to New York, 25 dead.
We
went
keep
back
on
to
doing
Georgia, 28 dead. They said, man, these people out here acting. They don't care.
So why
and
can we believe in
thing,
you?
And we always try to, and the sad thing is, we as a people, we don't see what we're doing. We don't see what we're doing wrong. Is there gentrification? Yes, there is gentrification. But how about this? We sitting there talking about, man, we want our reparations, but guess what? I hate to say this, and I'm not, and hey, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you know what? We get that money. What difference is it going to make? Because you know what? That money's going to go right in. That money's going to go right into the white
Louis Vuitton won't be richer.
Why? Louis Vuitton's going to be richer. Nike, forget about it. Yeah. You're going to run and go buy
absolutely.
The damn Air
Jordan. And you, you seen that?
No
you
real estate,
that with the
no black bitch.
You seen that with the unemployment? Unemployment was what they were what they would do with that money.
Check.
You seen that with that $600 that they were giving out all over the place. They're not going to take that money, because guess what? Half of them people that getting that $600, first of all, they didn't earn it because half of them didn't work no damn well. The majority of them didn't work no damn well. And guess what? Ask them where that money is now. Now, if you're invested in something...
Hold on. Caller.
If they invested in something, then that's different, but I doubt that.
Well, got you. Wait, caller 5775 and caller 1111. You're on the air with the menu. What's up? I mean, one at a time, of course.
Okay, I'll go first.
Good evening.
Okay, I'll go
first. Good evening, everybody.
Mm-hmm. How you doing? 5775. Yeah, 5775 first. What is your name, sir?
This is Max, of course. This is Max.
Max, what's up?
Fellas, I just saw your topic there, and I was just surfing on the internet, and I'm like, whoa. Once I saw the title of it, I jumped in and dialed the number right away. So I'm listening to you guys' voices. So I'm sitting back, and I'm listening. I'm like, I have a question. The question is, of people in this panel, how many of you
well,
guys...
Well, do me a favor. Hold on. That question that you have, we got caller 111 on the air, and if they want to answer that question to join in, that'll be great. So call the 111. Your name?
Okay. My name is Joe.
Oh,
hello,
Joe.
Brother B.
Hey, what's up, Mr. Joe? How you doing?
How you guys
so Max
doing?
Has a, all right. So, wait. Max has a question. I don't know if you'll be able to answer it, but go ahead, Max. Fire away.
All right. So for the ladies and guys that's on that panel right now, how many of you guys in your life have attended seminars that was tended for black movements in your time, like with scholars, professors, to organize, you know, talk about these subjects and solutions, not just about complaining, but to talk about what moves to make? Because I heard about the reparations. I heard about how things are divided. There is a lot, because nobody cares about our problem. That we need to care. We need to solve our own problem. So the first thing we need to do is to have therapy first. We need therapy. This whole black movement needs therapy because we're too divided. We need to get ourselves back in order by having these honest topics and solutions and air out all the issues, because it's so divided and it's so hectic.
Now, we're going to put Mr. Joe on the spot.
Yeah. Well, he's directing that to... He's directing that towards black people, towards all of you guys helping yourselves, which I think is a good idea, because no other group of people, Italians aren't going to help Irish aren't going to help Italians, they're not going to help the Poles aren't going to help Hungarians, and whites will help blacks if it helps whites, and blacks will help whites if it helps blacks. But nobody has a vested interest in their own agenda than they themselves. So what Max is saying is the truth. Blacks got to get together and, you know, don't wait upon other groups of people to help them.
Now, you know, my thing is this. Wait, real quick, before you go in, Ms. Cherry, my thing is this. No, Max. I have, to my recollection, I have never attended any type of seminar or group or whatever talking about, you know, any black initiatives or what we need to go forward. And the reason why I haven't done that is because I don't see cohesion. It's like you may see everybody shaking hands and kumbaya at that moment while everybody's together. But then what do you do when you separate? What do you do when the seminar is over? Because obviously for all the seminars and things that have been done throughout the years, throughout the decades, through all the marches, all the, you know, the fighting and struggles, what have we really accomplished? Because as it was said before, we're still in Chicago killing each other. We're still in New York killing each other. We're still doing, you know, things that we're not banding together. So my whole thing is I would love to go to a seminar, but you know what? Sometimes our own worst enemy is us. And
well, you just said, made my point even better. You actually made my case even more stronger because you're just being honest right now. You're being honest. You never attended.
Of course.
If you attended at least two, what you're saying now is not what you think, because those seminars I attended, especially in the 90s, helped change me and helped reinvent my career and my path of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I became more of a high-value individual for myself as a father, as a professional, as a realtor, a businessman. And one of the things we learn is listening skills. We learn how each individual has to have a platform to address and express their opinions, but at the same time, do not cause any sort of harsh words to another person to cause an argument. We have to give each individual that platform to address. But at the same time, if you attend these seminars, it will change your life, literally.
As the individual.
It has.
On an individual basis.
And as a whole, because I'm like a virus. I'm going to spread that towards my daughter and to my family and to some of my friends. So I'm going to find a pattern where it's not a miracle. It doesn't happen one day. It takes time and process. So this group of small people I have, they do change. And they change based on the knowledge that I picked up. And so myself being, I have multiple careers, and I'm blessed for that seminars that I attended to. Those careers helped me in being who I am. And I'm pretty sure if any one of these individuals that's on that panel now has attended it, I can only imagine how good we would have been.
Now, Max, hold on. We got caller 5974 on the air. But before we go to that caller, I got to throw this out there with what you just said. I believe there's an emotional vulnerability that we have, which when we get attacked or we feel we get attacked when something is said, like we lash out. Now, I think that a lot at some of these seminars and at some of these rallies, they kind of tap into that emotional vulnerability that we as melanated people have, because they take our experiences, they take what has happened to the Sandra Blands or the Tamir Rices, they take that and they invoke this, they stir the pot as to where, you know, it boils over a bit. Some people go left, some people go right. But 5974, what do you think?
So I want to say this has been a really great conversation. I'm like vibing with what everybody is saying on different levels, but working backwards, I kind of agree with the last caller who was talking about the seminars. I actually think when people get together in a room, think about your family gathering. There's like a sense of community. And sometimes when you go to a group of like-minded, melanated people, as you say, you get that sense of community that when you're just moving on your own individually, you may not see or feel. But I also want to say that I think this notion that we're not cohesive is a little bit fake, and it's part of what people want us to believe about ourselves so we can't get together. We haven't ever had, like, one mind and all moved in one direction. When Malcolm was going left, Martin was going right. And I think we're just not remembering it the way it was actually happening. So it's not as if we all have to think the same way. We all have to want to achieve the goals in the same manner, but it's that we all want the goal of us doing better, being better, getting, let's say, what's ours, quote unquote. And how are we going to do that is really the question. But not a sense of, like, we all have to be in agreement to get there, because that's not going to happen. We're, like, a big diaspora, lots of different people coming from, you know, some were enslaved people here in this country. Some are coming from the Caribbean. Some are coming directly from Africa. Some are coming from European countries where they may have been raised and grown up. And, you know, so everyone has different attitudes. But when we get together, we all want the same thing. So it's just, how do we get there?
Ms. Sherry.
I'd like to answer that.
Who's next? Mr. Joe, Ms. Cherry?
Oh, I'm listening to what everybody's saying, and I identify myself as pro-black. Clarify, because I am pro-black does not mean I'm anti-white or anti-Spanish. So I just think that we as a people, time concentrating on folks, other people, that we don't actually focus on fixing ourselves. Accountable for our actions. When we do something, we compare and say, well, you know, five people killed five people, and he only got 5 years, and this guy got 20. Be focused on. Focus on, as a community, as a people, they're killing people, period. By bad behavior, because we're providing.
You keep cutting out, Ms. Cherry. You keep cutting out.
So what we're doing is, instead of focusing on what our issues are and trying to resolve them and move forward, we're so busy stagnant, pointing the finger and saying, well, not us. It's a big thing that divides us as a people. We're subdivided, like I said, by from the languages that we speak. People of color, we're all black people. If they look at me and they look at you, I'm African American, and that you're Haitian, they see that we're all black. We don't get that. Subdivided ourselves, and so because we're subdivided, different cultures together, they were still all black. If you're living in America, you're going through the same issues here. That. And I don't think until we address that and we see that together, it's always going to be dating a guy that was African, and they have like these monthly meetings where they catch up on what's going on in their local village. And I guess I walked in and they just assumed that everybody there was African. He began to talk about African Americans, and he used the word Kafka, the word met, the question. And is that word is equivalent of saying nigga. About African Americans, talking about African Americans, talking about how we were lazy, how we weren't able to succeed in our own country, they're immigrants, result of first Africans that were brought over as slaves. 100 years.
I'm sorry, Ms. Cherry.
A whole bunch.
Ms. Cherry, sometimes it seems like you say something and then, like, part of the word, like, part of your sentence cuts out. I don't know what's going on.
Can I throw something in? Is it possible I could say something?
Yeah, and then we'll either go back to Ms. Cherry or Mr. Joe. Go ahead, Mac.
All right. What I'm going to say, and maybe Ms. Cherry could agree, we need to be more competent people, especially for the black community. There's just too much incompetent people that's in the media and the public view. And it's contaminating our children. And there are times where I tell the young children, that's not who we are. That's not us. That's just what they want us to be.
True. Mr.
We
Joe.
We believe
True, Mr. Joe?
Okay. Speaking as a non-melanated person looking partially from the outside in, I do think
we
that
appreciate
most blacks,
you.
I do think that most blacks are not cohesive. And I think it's a problem amongst blacks, which is the same amongst most Americans. Now, don't take this the wrong way. Most blacks are just as stupid as whites, because it's the political issues of today which are keeping everybody down, even if they don't realize it.
Uh-huh.
Blacks have, what blacks should look for are the same liberties and rights and resources as white Americans, and that should be their priority. Max was talking about just now about being incompetent. I don't know exactly what he means. Maybe he means not a lot of people, not a lot of blacks are proficient in business, but I do think that a lot of black parents should pay attention to their sons and daughters' scores on their tests. I don't think they pay attention enough to their kids with their homework. And as a result, blacks are falling behind in school, from what I understand, by a hell of a margin. If you fall behind by as much as I've heard, you're not getting good jobs. So black parents have to be on the ball to make sure that their sons and daughters come inside, do their homework, then they can go outside.
Can I,
Well, real quick, I mean, I do want to say with what you said, Max. Yeah, Max, I agree. Like, there is a lot of incompetence, you know, within us. I mean, yeah, because some of us dumb ourselves down for a dollar. So some people think that, you know, some of our people think that it's more important to have the shiny things and the money to actually go forward as a people. Like that Black Wall Street mind, people may shout it, but does it really exist? So I think it's the thing of where we choose not to educate ourselves on the things that we need to educate ourselves on to push us forward. But as you were saying, brother.
Can I respond to Joe?
If Max doesn't mind, because I know Max was about to make a point.
Yeah, no, okay, go ahead. I was going to throw in there, but no, ladies first.
Oh, come on, let's be cool.
No, I'm a gentleman. That's also what's needed.
So,
but
Joe,
ladies first.
I do have one question, because I agree with a lot of what you said about, you know, what blacks, you know, people falling behind and stuff like that. And also the parents,
right,
you know, need to be on top of things. But I do have some questions, because, you know, I think a lot of time from the outside looking in,
uh-huh,
don't see what we see from the outside looking in. And oftentimes, I just have to ask this question. Do you believe that there is white privilege?
When it comes to comparison between whites and blacks, yeah, because racism does exist. I don't think institutional racism exists, but I do think day-to-day racism exists. But if you're talking about if you're a white person in a white world, no.
Okay, so when I speak on that term, I'm speaking in relation to, you know, a lot of black families, mother and father, are working around the clock, right?
Right.
And I noticed that, you know, a lot of white families, too, surgeons, you know, lawyers, working around the clock, too.
Right.
And they don't really have the time, neither, to stand over their child and make sure the homework is done. But yet they have resources like maids, tutors, and stuff like that, tutors that can also help or assist them with those things, whether it be nannies and stuff like that.
Okay.
What I'm getting to is that a lot of there's an inequality in salaries that we also face, you know, where a black and a white person can work the same position, but yet, you know, with the same, maybe not the same exact degree, but you have an associate, I have an associate, and yet we're paid differently, you know, stuff like that. So these are the challenges that we face. So therefore, because of our pay being different, you know, we can afford a lot differently, you know, as far as anywhere. You might be able to afford a tutor, a nanny, or something to assist you, but that's not in my household. So I say that to say, you know, from the outside looking in, it looks as if that's not what we want, but a lot of times it's not what we can afford. So,
well, I wasn't
so,
implying it's not what you wanted.
It's always what we like. We want to be present while children, but we also understand that, you know, the cost of living, that it's more important for us to work around the clock to make sure we can keep a roof over our head. So a lot of these parents are more so overwhelmed with supplying the necessities for their children.
Right.
As far as in a roof over their head, clothes in their household, food in their refrigerator, and then on top of that, I have to make sure that a meal, you know, is being done. So I might not have the time, you know, to stand over my kids and make sure homework is done. A lot of, not white folks' fault, but a lot of these households are broken, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's single mothers that's doing the everything. And then now as we go, there's a lot of challenges that we face that intervenes with, you know, some of the things that you from the outside looking in are saying that we need to do. And I agree. There's something that us as black people, that's something that we need to fix. You know,
okay.
I really think that's something that we need to focus on, and we need to bring those households. We need to put fathers back in the households that they created these children. You know, unfortunately, some of the men have created children in multiple different places. I think that women need to start taking accountability and controlling their womb, who they allow in it, and who they allow to, you know, clearly conceive, who making better choices with who they conceive with. But I think from the outside looking in, these aren't the things
okay.
that y'all see.
Right. Well, I like to respond, but I'll respond after Max, you know, if Brother B wants Max to go.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I wanted Max to, you know, get his point off.
To be back to what Joe, I think I need to explain more to Joe as far as being competent. Like myself, I'm going to give myself an example, being a dad, a father. My duties has to be more important than my ego. That's what I learned from those seminars when I was in college. We
like
need
that.
To put that first before our ego. When I'm saying that, my most important duty right now is a parenthood and my career. As being a dad, I make sure I tell my daughter, who's already an adult now, and I tell her, even before she hit adulthood, and she still follows those trainings that I gave her, that three things you have to value as a young lady: your womb, your time, and your virginity. Those are valuable assets. You lose all three of them, you're going to lose. You're going to be out of the race. I'm sorry. You're going to be out of the
race. But what about her self-worth? But what about her self-worth? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Because there's a lot of us, especially in this generation, men and women, you know, boys and girls, they really truly don't know their worth. I mean, everything has just been so.
We have to step in. We, us parents, mom and dad, have to step in to remind them how valuable they are. What are their talents?
And I applaud you, but if I can, you know, jump the fence and play devil's advocate. Who makes more sense, or who looks better, the mother and the father, or the mother, the single mother, or the streets, where everything
that's
else is popping off in the streets? You know what? And that's the whole thing. We a lot give in to the ego. Sadly, it seems like it may be personified more in the media, but it seems like our people always give in to the ego more than anything. It's always been promoted. Go ahead,
Michelle. No, I'm sorry to interrupt. It's just, it kind of bothers me that, yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, gotcha. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. It kind of bothers me that we take a few of us and we use them to represent the majority of us. So when you're talking about what looks better, the streets or the family, most of our kids are making the right decisions. We have some people, like in every culture, that don't follow. and they do stand out, and they are emphasized because that's what the mainstream, that's what they want our narratives to be. But I don't think we should take credit from those kids that are going every day and making the right decision and put emphasis
yes.
on those that choose not to.
And I don't take credit from them. The whole thing is, like I said, let me play devil's advocate. Because this is what the world perceives of us. It's not just white people. It's not just Latin people. It's what the world perceives of us. So what do we do?
It's what we perceive of ourselves.
Hold on. What do we do to go against the stereotype?
We have to start believing what we see and stop letting other people tell our story. I'm in a town right now where, you know, if you throw the name out, it's not considered a favorable town. But I'm very involved in my community, and I do see that we have kids that have made it on the cover of Times Magazine. And I personally know three kids in the last 4 years that are at Ivy League schools. But if you bring up the name of my town, they want to talk about there was a disagreement or something that happened at a park and somebody was killed there. That's what they want to emphasize. People that are in the community and that know what's going on in the community, they don't have to believe that narrative. If you're involved and you know what's going on, you don't need someone to tell you their story. There's so much good going on in these neighborhoods, but yet, whenever I turn on the news, I hear Brooklyn. What's Brooklyn? Shooting and stabbing. You know how many good things are going on in Brooklyn? You know how many good things are going on in the Bronx?
The media won't even come out for that. Amazing
to believe that.
But what... And you know what, Miss Selena, now check this out, and it goes along to what you say, and once again, I'm going to play devil's advocate, because it's a show, and we have it a forum. I mean, what you're saying is all well and good about those few or those many that may be doing good, but see, then when you have somebody with some influence that turns around and maybe is on a record or on a TV show, you know, and they're flossing and they're looking good and talking about selling drugs and, you know, multiple women or twerking or doing this and that, there's an attraction that we seem to not be able to separate ourselves from, which overshadows everything that's good in our community.
But
Our community, that's the whole thing. It is a hypocrisy, and we don't stop it. We kind of throw the fuel on the fire to it because we don't shut it down. That's the problem. We see these things happening. We hear this music. We see this, but yet we still support it. Let me tell you something. I don't watch the first season of Power. I watched it. I don't watch anything Power no more. You know why? Because I'm tired of seeing gratuitous violence and all this sex perpetuated by brown and black people, melanated people. I'm tired of seeing it because it seems like that's the only thing that just gets ratings for us or puts us on a map. So best believe when you take your Long Island self all the way out to Kentucky, they're going to look at, oh, she's a 50 Cent or she's a Megan Thee Stallion, because that's all they see and that's all they know. And what do we do to make ourselves look better? What do we do?
I personally don't walk out into this earth trying to prove that.
I mean, it's not just you, but we all have to have some type of accountability. I remember I had a conversation with somebody, and somebody said, oh, did you see? No, I don't watch that stuff no more. No, I don't listen to this no more. I don't do that. And it's like, you crazy? I said, no, I'm not crazy. I'm tired of the same crap from our people, but yet we want to scream, we want change.
It
want somebody,
you
can't ask a white man or somebody else to look at me differently if I'm turning around with a shoot a Negro or blasting a song talking about selling drugs and right in his face. I can't expect him to respect me.
It's weird to me because we walk out in this earth, right, and we don't want to be racially profiled. We don't want to be looked at differently because of the color of our skin. Yet, I have to beg you to not look at me as Megan Stallion, and I ain't never talked a day in my life. But I gotta convince you I'm not Megan Stallion. Like, isn't that crazy? You don't want to be profiled. Well, I don't want to be profiled based on what you see or what the media puts in front of you, too. Like, I'm one of those.
Well, you're breaking up. You're breaking up.
I also didn't want to be judged based off of what you see on TV. I don't want to be generalized based off of what you see on TV. So it's now when I walk into the street, I don't have to prove to you that I have my own business. I got to prove to you that I'm not Megan Stallion. And I ain't never twerked a day in my life.
Unfortunately, you're going to have to. It's the same thing with any type of immigrant. Do you mind if I step in here?
Of course.
It's the same as with any immigrants who have come over. When the immigrants first came over, the Italian immigrants, they were called greaseballs. And for 20 years or so, they had to prove their worth. And they followed the Irish, who had to prove their worth for a while. Then afterwards, they didn't have to. But if the stereotype is still existing in today's world about a certain group of people, mainly blacks, afraid you are going to have to go uphill to fight that stereotype.
Censor it.
There are many people proving that, but they don't receive that.
Many people proving it.
So
I have a question. If you feel that you said that you're not black, so that's why I'm directing it towards you. If you feel that we have to prove it, meaning that, you know, it's not believable, we have to show that we are capable of, why are there so many roadblocks put up against black people? It almost seems like if it's something that you don't expect of us, why is it made more difficult for us? Why do I have to prove, like she said, why do I have to prove I'm not Megan Stallion? Why do I have to prove that I deserve the job by doing extra hours overtime or being the head of the class as opposed to just performing like everybody else? It's almost like there's a fear. If the door is open and everything's on an even playing field, then there might be problems.
Because the stereotype is there. Like I said, the mainstream media shows it. Test scores show it. The news events show it. The image of black people.
I'm saying test scores. We're saying test scores may not be accurate depending on how you test. But when you get out in the real workforce, and me and you are doing the same job, because I work in corporate America, and I'm doing the same job as a white male, and I know I outperform him, but my pay is not the same, and my title is not the same, and I won't have as many advancement opportunities just because I am African-American and I am a woman. So my question is, why are those, if everything is equal and it's just a matter of proving it through performance, why are there roadblocks, additional roadblocks put up against it?
Well, because the stereotype is there. Maybe the boss feels, because you're a black African woman, that you're not going to perform up the ladder as well as somebody else. But let's say that he believes that you will.
Or maybe he feels I will not perform.
That's where I was.
He doesn't want to put me in a position.
I gotta say something. You don't have to cut across. You kind of gotta go through. I don't think Joe is in a position to answer that question.
Right.
Because Joe doesn't make law. Joe doesn't make the politics. Joe doesn't make the laws. Joe doesn't have that type of thinking. Mr. Joe doesn't feed into that stereotype, because if he did, he'd just come on here. He probably wouldn't come on the show because he wouldn't want to talk to a bunch of niggas.
Let me finish.
Like, I don't think Joe Mr. Joe has that type of mindset. See, that's the whole thing.
Let Joe talk for himself.
I will let Joe talk for himself, but I do have to interject, because the question that you're asking, to a degree, it still boils down to accountability. Because if I had to step out and look at you, why should I put you in a position to run over me? And that's just that may not have anything to do with race. It may not have nothing to do with color at all. It can just be the type of person who you are,
or just
that I don't want over me.
It could be sex. Yeah. It could be sex.
Exactly, too. Exactly.
You don't want a woman running the show.
Can I interject for one second? And I get exactly what you're saying.
but I'm more so so disturbed, but more so the view, the perception. It's sad that, you know, Joe feels like the bad outweighs the good, but the media don't take a tour at HBCU and show Joe black excellence. They don't take a tour at Harvard to show Joe how many black students are enrolled at Harvard. So therefore, this perception is what he sees on the news, because they don't show black excellence in it. They don't show that. He doesn't know that probably the Moderna shot was made by a black person. He don't know that, because they don't put that out there.
Don't know what?
And you know, the Moderna shot was made by a black woman.
Oh, the vaccine?
One of the vaccines was made by, black doctors were on the board to help create that vaccine. So these are the things that aren't pushed in front of Joe's eyes to see black excellence, so he can see black excellence in a different light. So when he tells me about test scores, I'm like, what test scores? Who's test scores?
Miss Selena, respectfully, I will say this. What do we do to correct the media? See, that's the whole thing. That's another reason why me and Red do this, is because this is our platform. So
what do we round Joe up
care.
And
wait,
take
wait,
him
wait,
to
wait,
an
wait,
HBCU?
Wait, wait. No, that's the whole thing. What do we do? We do not hold the media accountable. We'll try to hold Joe accountable to answer the questions for a whole bunch of white people that he may or may not know. Or a whole situation of stereotypical attitudes that he went, but once again, accountability, because that's what this is about. What do? We don't go to the media. We always give them fuel to burn us. It's the media. If we know that we're being cast in a certain light, if we know that the media is not, I give you that. But if I may finish, what are we doing to change the narrative? What are we doing?
I think we are doing the right thing. I think what we need is, like, allies. We need people like Joe that may have interacted with black people, who have watched TV and seen that every black person he sees on there is shooting and stabbing, but because he works with them one-on-one, he knows that's not the case.
Right, that's not the case.
I didn't need Joe. No right. Disrespect. I didn't need Joe to start the minute. I don't think a lot of people needed to start their own media and to build their own narrative.
What I'm saying is, I think we need allyship. We need people who have actually had interactions with other people of color, that when they see something and they're amongst their own and they're talking, because we do the same thing, they can say, you know, this person says, oh, yeah, he's robbing this one every day. No, this kid actually, he's in Harvard. I know his family. You know, don't sit there and be quiet, not challenge what you know is not real, because you have those real interactions with minorities. So that's where I see Joe's role coming in. Joe's role in being able to talk to other people, get to know them, and know the falsehood, whether it's through the media or mainstream or just talking, to stand up and say something.
I don't need Joe to do my job. I don't need Joe to take care of my people. Well, hold on, wait, I'm sorry. I get where she's coming from. But once again, I'm playing the other side of it, because you know what? You think Malcolm X was asking anybody else to take care of his people? It was all about
we're not asking
Joe
to take care of that.
I'm just saying, because what you're asking for is a lot
behind
of
closed
Joe,
doors.
Like Joe.
I don't think behind closed doors, regardless of what ethnicity you are from, you have the same conversation that you have in mixed company. I know in my family, when it's all minorities together, we talk a little bit differently than we do amongst, you know, mixed company. And I'm assuming it's the same thing for Joe. I'm assuming when Joe is with 100% white people, you may not be having the same conversation you would have with minorities there.
That's true.
I don't believe that.
Right.
So that's
for
what
example.
I'm saying. In that type of forum, when something comes up that is questionable, that Joe knows is not accurate because he's interacted, that's what we need him to stand up as an ally and say, wait a minute, this is not necessarily true. That's not my experience. You know, that's not everyone's experience. That may be what's on the TV.
And it happens
have to
with me all the time. It happens with me all the time. When I go back to Brooklyn, right, and I'm coming from Long Island, my black friends is like, well, you out here with those racist folks? And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, let me tell you about a couple of white folks. I love some of them white folks. They have treated me better than anybody. Not all of them are, you know, racist and what you think. That's correcting that persona of what black people, and that's what we need Joe to go back and do as well. Wait a minute. You know, I've had my talks with some of them, you know, even the people at the menu, and I can actually say they don't, you know, align up with what the media presents. That's what we need. We need people to say, that's not quite true. That's not quite true. You know,
and there are people who do that. So people like what you're talking about, people from both sides of the fence do that and should do that. So as to correct the perceptions that an individual may have of the whole. But when it comes to America as a whole, people are judged on an individual basis by how the whole is looked. So if the blacks in particular, if the perception of blacks is that the test scores are lower, the neighborhoods are worse, the schools are worse, then the individual who goes to Harvard has to prove himself to be not of that stereotype, which is relatively easy to do, because if you come from Harvard or some other first grade school, you're going to perform well on the job.
That's
I just
that's
I was going to say with me, I received a 4-year academic scholarship to a college. And I remember going on campus and hearing, it was a predominantly white school. I think all the minorities represented less than 4%. And I remember, like, going to buy my books, and there was a comment made that was just blatantly racist. It was like, well, you know what? They're here. They must be here on some sort of, what do you call it?
Affirmative action.
Affirmative action, like Joe said.
No. Yeah. I busted
like
my
favor.
Behind and studied. Yeah, you know, you're here because you're black, not because you deserve to be, not because you study, not because you're smart. It's because we have to have a couple of you in here so that, you know, it doesn't look like we're a racist university. And I resented that because I'm like, I busted my behind like everybody else. In fact, you'll see when my grades come out, I might be doing a little bit better than everybody else. But it's just the assumption that if you're somewhere that is not normal or not mainstream for people of color, you didn't earn your way in. It was given to you as a favor. Even if you get in there and you do your best has to be 10 times better than to get the same acknowledgement. And I think
now,
as a minority person, we go into things knowing that.
Can I add
now,
something?
Now, I look at, well, yeah, and I was about to tap you real quick, Max, because Max said, I appreciate the fact that Max spoke on his accountability to his child, to his daughter, and passing on certain things to her so that way he's equipping her to go out into the world and perform the best and represent herself the best way possible. But he put that accountability, he took that accountability and he instilled that in her. And see, that's the thing. You reach one, you teach one.
Mm-hmm.
How many of us are really doing that? See, the whole thing is this. I get where all of you are coming from, but I'm not going to put it in Joe's lap because you know what? Once again, I have to accept some accountability. I don't need Joe to fight for me because I can fight for my damn self. I don't need Joe to speak for me because I can speak for myself. And while I may appreciate Mr. Joe's efforts, I know Mr. Joe has to be who he is to his people when it's time to be it. So I'm not going to rely on Mr. Joe to do my job for me or even help me do my job. And sometimes you just have to say to hell with the help. It's being self-reliant. If we can't depend on our own, how do we go forward? Why are we always sticking our hand out looking for someone else to help or pull us up? Because that pan that we always look for may not be the cleanest. So you shouldn't always take it. But go ahead, Matt.
I'm glad you said that because you took the words right out of my mouth. Let me break it down in a few seconds. No, it's okay. It's okay because I was just leading to that. Brother B, you and your partner, I believe Red, you guys are the
host
of the show, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yes. You guys.
Until Miss Selena joins on, but we'll talk about that later. I'm sorry, go ahead.
All right. So
I'm coming.
Let's say you three guys. Your three groups, you three are held accountable and to try to build the movement by having this show. That's the first step, is to have this particular program that you have right now. Now you have that. The second is to gather 10,000 listeners. Each bring in $100. Out of the 10,000, $100 will come into $1 million. You take that $1 million, you organize a film. You build a film or a show out of that $1 million to depict the blacks the way they're supposed to be portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
To help spread it out the way y'all three want it to be done. Without the help of Joe or anybody else. It's beginning y'all three, guys. That's the way it should be, like Brother B just said. That's the way you started, by being persistent. And that's where we lack. We don't have our duties in order. Huh? That's why our duties have to be over our ego.
So without the help of Joe, so Max, you're prejudiced. Okay, I understand. I'm kidding.
No offense, Joe. No offense. It's all black first.
I
all black first. Don't mean a racist, but I'm just black first. The first thing I came out was black. That's it.
No, but you know what? There have been, white people that have assisted us, in our journey throughout the years in this country. But the whole thing is, once again, we have to really take a look at us, because the Black Wall Streets of America weren't started by whites. It was started by blacks. We lost the will. Somewhere along the line, we lost the will and determination. We lost the cohesiveness. We lost the unity, as Miss Selena spoke of so eloquently earlier. What happened to the beauty of us?
I can talk about that on another show. My opinion.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, we can definitely set that up, I'm just sad that we've fallen from such a grace. But we've allowed ourselves to be bamboozled.
Can I fall from
that grace. But go ahead, Mr. Joe. Go ahead.
I want to say this for about 2 minutes with regards to that. What happened? If you guys take a look at your culture back in the 1900s, 20s, 30s, and 40s, you had a very good cohesive unit. The family unit was like 80% intact. You only had something like 3% out of wedlock. Test scores were through the roof. You had the highest. You had one high school, which was the highest performing high school in America. You had Black Wall Street, like Brother B's talking about, and all you guys know about. What happened was,
after Black Wall Street ended, the Harlem Renaissance began. But go ahead, Mr. Jones.
Mm-hmm.
What I think happened was the politicians pulled the wool over everybody's eyes in the 1964 and 65 Civil Rights Act and Voting Act.
Uh-huh.
Because what I think happened was integration. That by itself is not bad. I'm all for segregation and integration if it's not government sponsored. If it's voluntary, you pick whoever you want to associate with. No problem with me. Blacks, you don't want whites in your neighborhood? Got no problem. Whites, you don't want blacks? No problem. But what happened was, is that if you guys know about the supposed, I don't know if this actually happened, but Lyndon Johnson took over the Great Society. Do you remember the statement? He said, we now have the N-word voting Democrat for the next 100 years. So what happened
was, open.
Yeah. Blacks were on a plantation in which they couldn't vote for their own politicians to defend them, to protect them, and to represent them. So you fended for yourselves. You did it very well. Then all of a sudden you put your trust in carpetbaggers. And the carpetbaggers passed rules and regulations that made it very hard for blacks to continue the cohesiveness that was around in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, in my opinion. Like I said, another show will be done on that, because I haven't done any real research into it, but I'd like to hear other people's opinion on that.
Well, then we need to set up that show. Thank you for the idea.
Sure, but that's why I would have to contribute, actually. Like I said, I haven't done any real research on it.
No, but you know what? But the interesting thing is, like I said earlier, after Black Wall Streets were dismantled, the Harlem Renaissance began. We had an opportunity. We had our chance. You know, we were doing it, and we did it on our own merits. We did it on our own strengths. And the whole thing is like he said, we allowed someone else to come in and say, hey, you know, this is what we can do for you. You know, what do you want to do? You want to be a part of it? Because, I mean, listen, there's no disrespect. But the older I get, I feel like, to a degree, we should have stayed segregated because it made us dependent on ourselves. To anybody who says that's not true, if you look at it, there's some cultures and ethnic groups in this country that are segregated, and look how they're doing, and look what they're doing for one another.
But we spread all over the place
like sprinkles and on ice cream, and it's like, what are we doing for us?
Can I respond to that? And I'm just going to give you a short story about what unity can do, right? I was a black kid.
I gotta hear you.
Okay.
I was a black kid
that came from Brooklyn that moved to Long Island, right? I had all the odds stacked against me. My mom died when I was 11 from the drug epidemic. I didn't know who my father was. You know, I grew up in foster care, and I came to this predominantly white school district, right? And although I had my own people there building each other up, there was a lot of challenges that I had at home. All those things that Joe said that we don't have, the tutoring, the parenting, looking over us, you know, to do our homework. There was a lot of verbal abuse. So the odds were stacked up against me. I can honestly tell you that up until my 11th grade year, I was in all region classes. Don't know how. I had anger problem, and all I knew how to handle these issues was to fight physically. You know, I had been getting charged left and right, behavior issues, right? There was one person in the school that said, it has to be more to it. This girl is smart. She's bright. She's passionate in her classes. What's going on? Only one person cared. That man was white and in Santa Claus. I mean, he sat at all my meetings when they were trying to kick me out of the school, saying, Esther, we can't do this. We need to get down to the root of the problem. I'm all for black people getting together and fixing our own issues, but it does not hurt to have our counterparts and people who don't look like us support us too. So when Ms. Shelley said something about allies, that stuck to me like, I can honestly tell you, I would not have got that man. My last year of high school, I wanted to change out of Regent English to be amongst my friends. That's the type of kid I was, because I was more so worried about being amongst my friends. That man stood in my guidance counselor and said, absolutely not, because if you change this, you change your Regent's diploma. He cared. We just need people that care. When we segregate each other, it's almost like giving people permission to care about their own race and nobody else. You handle yours, I handle mine over here. But I can honestly tell you, if that white man didn't care, I would ask you this,
and I have to throw this out there again. It may not have anything to do with color. He saw a light that he knew could shine brighter. It may not have anything to do with your color or your background.
Well, let me say this. I had a black guy
in counsel who
didn't care.
It could have been your background. But listen, it's
I had a black guy in counsel who didn't care enough to do what he did.
Yeah, but, you know, it depends. Like I said, it depends. I mean, listen, if I can tell the same story you told. After my mother passed away, I had my guidance counselor. She was Jewish. And she said, oh, you're getting out of high school on time. She said, I don't care how much work you have to do or how you're going to do it. You're getting out of here.
Right, but I said that to say, here we are pushing a narrative of everybody, every race take care of their own. But what if that man did exactly what you said. What if he only took care of his own and didn't even look at me and didn't think enough to care about me to see me through? What if he only took care of his own? Where would I be today?
Well, that's true, exactly. But I have to stick to my guns. That's if it was about
guns. I agree with Brother B on that one. That's just an exception.
I think he may have saw someone who he felt like, damn, she's busting her ass, she's trying. It may not have not been about color. It could have been the fact that you were a young lady who came up on hard times and you're trying to change your own narrative, and he's like, you know what, let me step in and help. Let me let these people know that, nah, listen, everything, I will not say everything is about color, because it's not always about color.
And let me tell you,
I think that was just compassion. I think that was the compassion of someone.
There were plenty
of
other kids that did not look
people.
Like me that he could have applied that attention to. So
let me say this also.
Absolutely.
Okay.
In that example also, that's his job. He's a teacher.
That's his
He's
job.
Supposed to be uplifting everybody.
Mm-hmm. Actually, he was a dean of students. He was a dean of students.
Still his job.
He went the extra for her because he wanted her to succeed. Like he said, there were other people that looked just like her.
Or that didn't even look like me.
And they didn't step in. Step in.
Yeah.
Step in. So if it was all about just doing for your own, he said she would not be where she is. Went out of his way. He was her ally.
Yeah, but this is also about the response to the segregation comment that I had made. The thing is that because this, again, if people want to stay with themselves, why not? But that doesn't mean they have to exclude others. It just means,
exactly.
You know what, I like this particular club. I'm a member of it. I like this person to be a member of it. And if you're, you know, if you qualify, you can be a member of it. But if you're not a member of the club, I can still associate with you, and we can still be pals. So it may, this particular instance that you're talking about may or may not have been about a white person helping a black person. It may have been about him doing his job. Or it may have been about him thinking, well, you know what? She's got a light, and let's help. The thing is, though, is that the particular question in about 3 minutes ago, well, the foundation of this was, the implied question was, is segregation good? Do we have to go back to segregation? Not necessarily. The segregation that occurred as a result of the Civil War and the Jim Crow laws was forced segregation to the benefit of white people, to them, and not to the benefit of black people. It was done forcefully. All I was saying was that if people have their own, they probably will flourish. It doesn't mean that they don't want others to come in and be associates or friends. But, you know, when you have a family, that doesn't mean you're going to adopt every kid on the block.
Uh-huh. Exactly. In the black community, they do.
I like that joke.
In the black community, they do.
Yeah. I agree. I think I don't think we necessarily need segregation. I think I agree with the fact that we don't need to stand there with our hands out waiting for somebody else to resolve our issue. I think we're beyond that. Like Max said, we know what the problem is. We actually have answers to resolve it. It's just a matter of doing it. Our platforms, we
right,
do
and
not
I wasn't implying that segregation
all.
Was the answer. I was just
well,
saying when.
But segregation is not a negative word.
So now.
It's like, depending on who it's coming from, it's not negative.
Yeah. I think
now
that if it's not selectively segregated.
Yeah,
everybody is
segregated. What Ms. Sherry said.
Mm-hmm.
It's like what Ms. Sherry was saying.
Now that we have these platforms.
Okay.
That we have these platforms, we can go out, we can reach out, we can talk about what the issues are, we can talk about resolutions. The next step is to do something, because a lot of talk with no action, right where we are right now. We know we can't sit there and expect somebody else to resolve our issues. Whether we're living with them or we're living separately, that's still not going to resolve the issue. What's going to resolve the issue is, like I said, focusing on our people, holding our people accountable for the moves that we need to do to strengthen our communities. We can't look at other people to resolve those issues. Once, not to say, you know, once our issues are resolved,
We're totally isolating ourselves. We don't want to speak to you. We don't want anything to do with you. But for right now, we need to focus on getting ourselves together.
Right.
The black community or the minority community is hurting. No one cares, even ourselves.
So what do we do about the stereotype? What do we do about the stereotype?
We can control
the
stereotype.
We don't have to worry about how other people view us.
We don't
have to worry about how other people view us. We have to worry about
it's
how
not,
we
not.
View ourselves.
So yeah, stereotype comes
their approval. We're trying.
There's a stereotype
trying to
in
teach
our,
to our
we, that we,
kids.
Okay.
Trying
we
to show
each
our
other.
Community what we are about. Exactly. So we have
but
to,
we,
like, I believe Max was saying, he speaks to his daughters and stuff like that. Have to address the stereotypes we are seeing because we believe them of ourselves. We're scared of our own people. We really are. Walk down the street at nighttime.
I wonder why.
Black male.
Well, you should be in Chicago.
You
know what the stats are in Chicago?
Your head. You get a certain mindset that pops in your head. Why? Do you feel that way
can
when
I,
you walk past a group of white kids?
Can I add
we
something
have to address
to that
our own stereotypes. We have to disprove them. We have to address them. And we have to work on breaking them down within our communities before we can even address other people feeling a certain way or thinking a certain way about us.
Max?
Yeah, I'm glad you guys are saying this. I think you guys need to avoid going to the 360 and focus on the 180. You guys got to make that change by not keep repeating the problem, the problem, the problem. Come up with the solution. But y'all three as the host, each one of y'all is going to have an individual task that's going to add strength into the movement. Your agenda is to get us into the right direction. Stop going backwards and thinking about the problem, the problem, the problem. We already admitted that we have a problem. We already admit we have to hold ourselves accountable. Now we got to move forward and bring in the task.
Well, this is
mm-hmm.
my contribution. Besides the show, there's certain things that I just don't condone or support, and will very much be vocal against when it comes down to how we are perceived in the media, or how we're looked at, you know, overall and stereotypically. I do not do it. Like I said, there's certain TV shows, music, I just don't listen to it. And anybody asks me why, I will explain to them why. Because this is not who we are. You can't take a Jay-Z doesn't represent me. 50 Cent doesn't represent me. But you know what? A lot of people see that as a representative of us because of their influence. And we don't.
Then you have your
that.
Two. Do you have your two other partners? They will bring you some ideas in how to recommend all that, and you guys can come up with better solutions to bring out your own style of entertainment. But you got to grow that following up, grow that viewers, grow it up. You're going to educate your followers. Now they're going to bring a program that you guys could be happy to watch and entertain. Mm-hmm. It all starts with your show. So
right.
you don't know that builds up. It can happen. It can get done. It can get
I think the
done.
Only way is to be different, to present a different story than what they normally see. Let's be honest, like the stereotypes and what the media presents, I don't think that we're ever going to be able to defeat that the Goliath, because let's be honest, when Bill Cosby's show was on a show in a different world showing black people going to college was on a show, they didn't view us as scholars and oh, the perfect black family. They still stereotyped us. It didn't matter
Absolutely.
What we presented to them. So I don't think that TV, using TV and what's on TV is enough to stereotype us, because I really do believe the good outweighs the bad, but it's not presented to them so that it, because it's not presented, they don't see us in that light. So it's our job to present a different light to them and change a percentage, at least a small percentage, of what they stereotype us to be.
But check this
yeah,
out.
Yeah, but it's hard to do that.
When you look at it, when we were on our own with the Black Renaissance and the Black Wall Street, who were we trying to impress?
Who was it all about? Who owned the schools, the funeral homes? Who owned the churches? Who owned the stores? It was all us. So once again, if we were trying to set a certain example, we were setting it to each other. We didn't have to prove anything to anyone. It was all about us. And the thing is this, it's sad. We live in a world where public perception counts. It matters. That's what it's all about. So we have to take a step back. Huh?
How come it didn't matter when the Cosby Show? You know when the Cosby Show mattered? When he drugged those girls or allegedly drugged those girls. That's when it mattered. How come nobody even knows about A Different World? Nobody knows about Different Strokes. Nobody knows about the Family Matters and all that stuff. Nobody cares about that. That's when we were presenting healthy black families with a mother and father in the household, raising their kids. They didn't care. We still was thugs. We still was drug dealers. We still was, what's the rat?
Gangsta
rat.
So,
we still was gangsta rat. They going to find something to say about us all the time, no matter what we put in front of their face.
Absolutely.
No matter what we put in front of their face.
To answer, before Joe steps in, Max, so you said in terms of what we're doing and how we represent, that's why when we do this show, I try to keep a certain decorum, try to. It doesn't happen all the time, but I try to, because somebody in India, like, I get to see the stats from Blog Talk Radio, India, Canada, United Kingdom, Mexico. They're listening. They download these shows. I don't know, some of them are different time zones, but they listen. And these may not all be black people. These are people of other ethnic backgrounds that are listening. So their perception of who we are may be changed by what we say or what we do.
Yeah, that's a start.
Now, you talking about
start.
Are you talking about that in a negative way or a positive way?
It's a start. It could be both. It's a start of good way. It's a good way. You guys, I mean, listen to how I'm talking to you guys. I want to make sure my women are treated first by letting them speak first. I'm not going to come in and out-talk or yell at somebody. When a woman's going to talk, I'm going to say, all right, ladies first. I want everybody from other countries to hear it. They need to hear it.
Because they don't think we have that. They don't think we have that.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. Absolutely right. But sometimes you can't change people's minds. Sometimes it's like, okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate myself. They say, oh, well, somebody's going to slip up somewhere. Or somebody's going to get on there and they're going to slip up and they're going to act like they're like, oh, they go to all the shoe drop. Yep, we knew something. You know, we knew there was going to be something.
And I don't worry about I don't worry about right, wrong. I just worry about winning. That's what I worry about.
Right.
I learned that from my dad and my grandpa. Your goal is to win. A woman's always going to disagree. Let them disagree with me. My job is to win. That's
right.
I just don't want
us to focus on changing the views of others because I just read an article about six black individuals who are all going to Ivy Leagues from Long Island, right? Now, that's an accomplishment. It was an amazing article.
Yes.
And when I went to the comments, you want to hear what I seen? Oh, well, hope she's not winning the twerking contest when she goes to Harvard. Or I heard, I hope you doesn't go to a party to celebrate because you're going to get shot. Like, it just lets me know that not that it doesn't matter, but regardless of what we accomplish, they're always going to see the negativity.
But those comments right there could have been made by some of us. Those comments right there could have been made by some of us.
I mean, I read them, and not that I would single out, but the black people were celebrating the black excellence, and the white folks was just, that's their perception. They was going along with the stereotype. And
that's to get you to react.
I mean, it was about 10,000 comments. It was about 10,000 comments, and I can honestly tell you, one of them was from a town called Wyange, and they made fun of that. So they totally disregarded that these six black kids was going to Ivy League schools.
And you know what?
It was more trending to talk about where they came from, what they look like, and what they could become. And Megan Stallion twerking and gangster rap. It was more trending.
But do you know what, sister? You see how it goes back to their perception of us? We live in a time where perception rules. It's not about what you do. It's about how you look. And that is what they put out in the forefront. They will not see anything else but a drug dealer, pimp, hoe, gangster. That's all they see. They don't see the Ivy League. They see the color, and they see what comes along with it. Until we can change that, until we can change that for ourselves, because it's either going to be two things that's going to happen: either we build our own and rely on ourselves, and we step away from them, and to build our own brand, or we have to play the game, play along, but we have to give them something to work with, because you know you're going to work twice as hard against that stereotype.
Right.
Because it's always going to be there. No matter what good you do, that stereotype is always going to be there. Listen, Barack Obama, you know what I mean? Things they had to say about him, and they still talking about him. No matter what, that man could do no good at all. His wife was a monkey, his kids was this, and all this and that. He was this. No matter what good he did, he was still wrong. Because he's black.
So,
not because he's a man. Because he's black.
So,
Michelle Obama was wrong. Why? Because she was smart, she's intelligent, and she supported her man. That's why. Go ahead, Ms. Terry.
I was just, I'm sharing this with you guys. I was watching the news, and they were interviewing this black author. And he was talking about how he got together with 70 other black male authors, and they put together a book of black males' experience growing up, going through adolescence. And they created this book called Black Boy Joy. It's made for, like, I would say, I'm reading it now because my nephew's in seventh grade. I want to see if it's okay for him.
Yeah, I read it.
But it's about 350 pages, and it's like all little short stories. And it's just showing you that don't grow up with tragedy. Some of us have probably very equivalent to what, you know, the stereotype is for white people. We grow up in two-family households. Some of us might live in the suburbs. Some of our parents, we might have single moms or single dads, but we're not struggling. So it's just 17 different black males telling different stories about growing up, not necessarily the stereotype used, and, you know, single household, locked up, that. So I thought it was quite interesting. I'm maybe about 100 pages short from being done. Definitely going to let my nephew read it because they address a lot of different things. Duality, your black males are in here. Some stories about that. Some stories about just growing up, getting to know your grandparents. You know, it's just a whole variety of stories. I'm just going to recommend it to anybody.
Yeah, I bet it.
Black Boy Joy.
Check it out.
Thanks. His last name is Mabalia, M-B-A-L-I-A. May.
Okay. Sounds
good.
Got
a lot of work to do, guys. We got a lot of work to do.
Well, you know what? That's the thing.
Yeah.
We've always had a lot of work to do. But you know what? There are people that came to this country after us, and they don't have to do any work anymore compared to what we're still doing. You know how sad that is? That's
yep.
Really sad. As Joe spoke on the Irish, the Italians, when Irish came here, they didn't like them. The Italians came here, they didn't like them.
That's right. No Irish allowed.
But you guess what?
In some cases,
the Irish made it happen.
Slaves.
Yeah. But the Irish made it happen. The Italians made it happen.
They're telling us to get over slavery because they went through the Holocaust. So they're telling us to get over slavery.
But you know what the thing is? They put themselves in a position to be able to talk that talk.
Yeah, the Jews, the follow the Jews perception. Would be a good example. And also what you're alluding to also, Brother B, would be if you take a look at the people from Vietnam, China, and Taiwan, when they've been over here, they struggled their asses off, and they think that working 10, 12 hours a day is a joy compared to where they came from, being in the rice paddies or being under the communist rule. And they came over here and worked hard, and they put their kids through school. They made sure. Now, almost all the Chinese kids, when they were growing up, were geeks, didn't know how to bounce a basketball worth a damn. But when they graduated from high school, they worked their way into the corporate structure.
Yep. They was always known, in my school, they were always known for math.
Oh, yeah. Computer,
too. They were dashing math. Yep.
There was a book
sadly,
written by a Chinese
think,
mother.
I would think it was basketball. Football. Huh?
There was a book written by a Chinese mother. I forget the name of it, but she... Chinese daughter. She talked about how she was growing up under the rule of a Chinese mother. And she said, you didn't play. You came home, you studied, you ate, you went to bed. You might have had a few friends, but the law was... You get good. Do you know there was an example of one particular woman, a Chinese girl, who went to, I think it was high school, you know, high school, probably high school. And her mother said, looked at a report card, right, and said, this is not acceptable. So the daughter and the mother go see the teacher, and the mother says, I'd like to know why my daughter has these grades. And the teacher says, but man, your daughter has 93% average. But the mother said, but she's out of a class of 30, she's 25.
That wasn't acceptable.
So it's all relative. In other words, she was doing well. I mean, 93% average is pretty good in anybody's book. But the mother said, not good enough. You had a 93, but you still ended up being 25 out of 30. Why weren't you number 2, 3, number 1, or number 4?
Hmm.
It's all about accountability, like Max said. Now, the Chinese, they have an advantage. Nobody's gone through Jim Crow except black people. And Irish and Italian are white. Blacks don't look white. So that also has to be taken into consideration.
Yeah. It's interesting the pressure. It's interesting the pressure that we don't want to put on our children, just because certain people say don't put too much pressure. They may crack. They may this. They may that. I mean, my father's a Trinidad. He didn't play. I came home. If I didn't know, or I wrote wrong, my homework wrong, he would rip up the paper and we'd do it all over again. So it was extremely neat.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't leave the table until I finished eating my vegetables. There's certain if I got up 5 minutes after getting up out of bed, I had to make up my bed.
But your old man has been extreme, but I bet you're glad now.
Oh, what? I hated him. I didn't like him at all. But you know what? I grew to respect
and made
everything
us,
that
yeah,
he taught
and made
me,
us
that
better
discipline.
People. I think. Yes, that made us better people. Now, what the problem is with that as well, and especially they put a lot of pressure on black people with that, like I said, it's the thing of, oh, that's capital punishment, oh, that's abuse, that's this, that. Come on, are you kidding me? And this is that to relate a lot of what you do when it comes to your children, and this is why that pressure isn't applied to these children. And guess what? I admitted to myself, and I even saw tell my friends, a lot of my friends, like, listen, we spoiled our children. We knew how we grew up, so now it's a spoiling for them. All of these kids are spoiled.
Listen,
are
ATS spoiled. Will be at your door in a second. You put your hand.
Absolutely.
On
your kid. Exactly. Because we don't do the things that our parents did to us that wasn't considered abuse or capital point and all this other. So I remember I worked in the school and I was doing an after school. So the kids,
I don't mean to cut you. We got 60 seconds left.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And I got to let everybody know, hey, Mr. Joe, Mr. Max, Stephanie, Miss Selena, hope you're joining us soon, Miss Cherry, K-Dog, Big Red, listen, it has been an extreme pleasure. Mr. Joe, we got to interact later on in another time about that episode we need to work on. So everybody have a blessed week. It's been a great one. Another one in the can. God bless. Be safe out there. Take care.
Amen.
Take care, people.
Take care, guys. Later,
all
guys.
Right. Have a good night.
Everybody be safe.
All right.
See you soon. Later.